Just having AI-generated stuff that's not marked as such is going to be, I think, pretty terrifying.
Welcome to Tech Talks, the podcast brought to you by Nash Squared and hosted by myself, David Savage, that's been bringing you the latest thinking from technology leaders for over 8 years. Joining me today, we've got Amber. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good. All good, thanks, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. So, look, we've got an interview to bring you today with Yaron Galai, co-CEO of Outbrain. This was recorded back in November, but couldn't be better timed. Let me ask a simple question of you, Amber. Have you seen the pictures of Pope Francis in his puffer jacket?
No.
Really?
No, I haven't actually. Yeah, no, I haven't. I'm going to have to Google it now quickly.
Yeah, quickly Google it whilst we're recording. And by the magic of editing, I'll close this gap up.
Oh, wow. He's a trendy man. Look at him. No, I hadn't seen that at all. Is that real or has that been edited?
Well, there's an interesting question. No, that's fake.
Oh, okay.
It's not been edited. It's AI.
Really?
No, but I was looking at it on my Twitter feed and got thoroughly confused initially, but it is AI. And in the interview with Yaron, he talks about the fact that advertisers are going to be concerned with the fact that premium content is going to be alongside fake news in Twitter feeds. And that's a problem for brand, and that's a problem for positioning. And that actually, it might be that advertisers end up being a force for equality within social platforms. You have no idea that that's AI generated. I think that Yaron makes the explicit point in the interview we're about to play you that AI generated stuff perhaps should be marked as such so that you know you're looking at something fake.
Yeah, I think that's a bad shout actually, because it looks so real, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even, I don't know, if you think of something that's been sort of like, that's like AI, I don't know, you don't think it would look as clear and as real as what this does. I can't think of a better word, basically, but it does. It just looks like someone's just snapped him whilst he's out and about in his like trendy little jacket. But it just,
well,
I'm very surprised.
I did love, there were one or two tags that were going around when it was kind of going around the internet earlier this week, things like Priest 17, which made me giggle. If you haven't seen it, anyone, you should really check it out. It's basically Pope Francis in a massive white puffer jacket with quite a embossed crucifix, and took a lot of people in. Have you also seen in the news this week that Levi's have announced that they're going to be using AI to improve the diversity of their models?
No. Do you know what? All this AI news, maybe I'm just living under a rock.
Do you work in technology?
Because, I was going to say, maybe I'm living under a rock because I haven't heard any of this.
So this is
going
news
completely
that...
over my head.
Oh, dear. Again, we're showing that we're fingers on the pulse here. No, AI is using AI. Sorry, Levi's rather is using AI models to increase diversity and sustainability. Now, question marks about both of those. I'm going to leave the sustainability piece to one side because I don't think I'm qualified enough to talk about it. But there are question marks. But increasing the diversity, AI is predominantly written by white men. So the algorithms that you're then increasing your diversity about is one of the most undiverse diversity increasing measures you're likely to hear about. Who's to say that these are going to be hyper realistic or representative? Probably going to fall short because of who's writing the algorithms. And why not just go out and recruit diverse models who actually represent the people that you want to buy your clothes?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I haven't really thought of that, to be honest, but that would be the logical thing to do, Dave. And that would, you know, we can't possibly be doing that, can we? So we're going to make our lives, far more sort of difficult and go around the houses to try to get to these things. But it's an interesting point, actually, because like you say, you don't think of who's kind of sat behind the scenes. And obviously it is going to be like a just white middle-aged men more than likely, so obviously you're going to get the same sort of content and the same sort of results unless you obviously sort of shake that up a little bit and add some more diversity into these types of situations. But it's interesting because again, you just look at the end product and the content that's produced, but you don't actually think about where it's kind of come from and then obviously who's kind of impacting and influencing that, do you?
Yeah, and the impact that it could have on, you know, if it's Levi's and you're a young, impressionable person, male or female, but we know the impact that advertising has had and the impact that kind of, say, Instagram has had on younger women. And you're seeing these models in your feed and they're going to be hyper-realistic, much like the Pope Francis image, you're probably not going to spot that it's a fake. And if it's sat there and it's advertising, you should know that it's fake.
Again, it kind of comes down to that thing of like the end product. Like when you see it like that and it looks so real, you have no reason to look into these other sort of external factors. Like you don't think like, oh, how's that been produced? What, you know, where's it come from? Who's kind of impacting that? Any of that really, you simply just look at what is there in front of you. And as you said, if you're an impressionable sort of person and you've like what you see, then obviously you're gonna be like, okay, cool, well I'm gonna go and buy this because it looks great. And you don't really look at any of those other sort of factors really.
Yeah, well it's a brilliant preface to today's interview, so we will without delay hit play on that. So Yaron Galai from Outbrain, co-CEO, have a listen and see what you make of everything that's going on online after you've listened to what Yaron had to tell us.
I'm talking to Yaron. You are co-founder and co-CEO of Outbrain. I might come back to that because, you know, in 8 years of interviewing, I don't think I've come across many co-CEOs.
So you have a few more interviews to do because Salesforce has a co-CEO.
There we go.
Netflix has a co-CEO. Whole Foods for many years. Google had 3 CEOs, the triumvirate for their pivotal years. So
there we go. Well, it's not something that I've seen... certainly in the London tech scene, which predominantly a lot of our guests are from, and you know we've for many years focused on growth organizations. Perhaps that's an interesting dynamic, working out exactly who then picks up what aspect of that role and how you divide that. But we'll park that. Might come back to it. Let's first of all ask you a little bit about Outbrain, who Outbrain are, and what the business primarily does.
Yeah, so Outbrain is the pioneer. We pioneered the space of recommendation engines for publishers, for media owners. You'll bump into us on many of the most premium publishers in the world. So we will power the news feed basically on places like CNN, New York Post, Daily Mail, Axel Springer publishers, et cetera, Washington Post, many, many others. And so when you're finished either watching a video or reading an article and you're looking at their newsfeed, Outbrain is the engine behind that.
And where did the idea come from? Where, you know, what's your background and led you to being in the position of founding the company?
So I'd say two things. I'm an entrepreneur. I started a few companies in the space, and I'll get back to that in a second. But the other piece is I'm a reader. I'm an obsessive, almost reader, and love reading books and magazines. I have this curse that if you hand me any random magazine or book, I have to read it cover to cover. It doesn't matter what it's about.
And that could be a curse.
Yeah, and that life was very manageable pre-internet, but especially as blogging started and all that, it just became impossible to read the internet. And so what was really itching me is I thought there should be a recommendation engine that understands what's interesting for me, understands what was interesting for the 10,000 people that just read this blog or this newspaper, and where we shared that data so that I could find what's really most valuable for my time. So that was the recommendation piece. And then on the advertising side, I pioneered the space with my team, obviously, in a previous company, the space of contextual advertising at a company called Quigo. And built a great company there, ended up selling that to AOL. And one of the things that was frustrating to me was I thought the advertising could be done much better. And the whole idea with Outbrain was, what if the advertising was actually almost a piece of content that uses the same algorithm to understand what people are interested in and serve them what we think would be the most engaging, instead of kind of thinking of advertising as an interruption, which I think most media is. It's like, you're here for the TV show, and now we'll stop the TV show and interrupt you. But what we thought of at Outbrain was, what if the advertising is actually of value, as much value as the content is to the user?
Just out of interest, how do you demonstrate the value? Because I suppose, and this might be a really stupid question, but if I think about some of those platforms that you mentioned at the beginning, or publishers that you mentioned at the beginning, high quality content as opposed to clickbait, sometimes you're going to get perhaps lost in the deluge of stuff that gets kind of put on someone's phone screen. I've been on one or two of those publishers. Sidebar of Shame, as it's known in the UK, Daily Mail is one of those ones that a lot of people go to. And you do get... you do get a lot of clickbait at the same time as some quality content.
And yeah, so Daily Mail, I'll just say, whatever you experienced there until a month ago was someone else. We just won that deal. Yeah, and they just rolled us out, made the smart choice to upgrade to Outbrain.
Well, then there is some context behind my question.
Yeah, but I'd call it, the way I like to think about it is more what's engaging to the audiences of a publisher. I think if you look at the New York Times or Washington Post or BBC, what they're trying to do with the headlines is really be interesting and engaging for users. I think that's true for any journalist in the world and any editor and the highest quality publishers. They're trying to be interesting and engaging. And so I think it boils down to that, where where clickbait becomes clickbait is if the headline that you're trying to be interesting with does not deliver after the click, if you're really not delivering the value the user expected. And that's, we try to be very cognizant of that at Outbrain and really stick to the highest standards.
So you started touching on something that would be interesting to talk about in terms of what do advertisers want to be? Before we hit record, you talked about the idea that advertising might be a slight against advertising in the way that it's seen in the industry. So I suppose understanding what the challenges are of advertisers and where they want this to go is a really critical piece of this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the probably 100-year legacy of advertising was that you can't really measure and you can't understand what's engaging to the user. And so I think that pre-internet legacy will capture an audience that's coming for the media, that's coming for a newspaper, a magazine, or a TV show, and then we'll cut the media side and we'll interrupt. And no one really knew what's engaging and what's not. And so the whole industry was based on that notion of interruption. And I think what's beautiful with where we are now and where we could continue developing the internet, certainly where Outbrain is we can actually understand what's most engaging and interesting and capturing the attention of users and personalize the recommendations, both content and advertising to them, better engage them and make sure it's a good use of their time.
And you also talked about the fact, again, when we were having a chat beforehand, this idea of cookies are going away. They are going away. You talked about it perhaps being the best thing to happen to advertising. Some people may be seeing it as a bad thing, but you're seeing it as a real positive. Why is that?
So I think on the publisher side, the negative piece of this for publishers is that it's going to be short-term painful because it's harder for advertisers to target the users and pay the amounts they're used to paying and all that. The reason I think for publishers this could be one of the best things in the past 25 years is that it finally gets back the sovereignty over, in air quotes, over the most premium audiences. And so up until now, if you're an advertiser and you wanted to capture, say, the Wall Street Journal users, but you don't want to pay Wall Street Journal their premium, you could do it through cookies by recapturing those users in a million different sites that no one ever heard of and paying much less for that quality audience. Now with third-party cookies going away, if you want to reach the quality premium audiences as an advertiser, the best way to do it is on those premium publishers. And so I think the smartest publishers are actually going to use this period where cookies, third-party cookies are going away as one of the best opportunities to engage with advertisers again, build up that trust, and get the premiumness that they deserve. And so I'm very optimistic about the future of publishing actually online with them.
It'd be interesting to talk about social briefly. I suppose social's role and the challenges in the industry. I don't want to labor on Twitter extensively, but if we talk about it briefly, because I've been a Twitter user for well over a decade. It's a source where I go, I follow a number of writers and journalists. It's a great way of getting content in one place. But there are concerns at the moment, obviously, with the direction and what might be going on there. But if we try and make it less about Twitter and more broadly about social, what do you think some of those challenges are that people are seeing and perhaps some of the solutions to make sure that through social, people do get that premium content that they're looking for?
Yeah, I think it's a huge challenge, because to me, social is really, it's different forms of publishers. And the big difference is that they're not paying journalists or editors. They're getting the content for free. And on the flip side, they're not controlling that content. That's probably the biggest value that you have in social, is that it is almost without control. For advertisers, that's a very challenging and tricky environment to be in, because they don't want to be next to fake news, or they don't want to be next to just very negative things and free for all and all of that. And I think Twitter is a pretty fascinating experiment at this moment, where you have the owner of Twitter saying this is a free for all and free speech, and you can say anything you want, which is fine. But advertisers are fleeing from that. And so I think for Outbrain, we've always been focused on the most premium publishers, where you have a journalist, you have an editor, they're responsible for what they're serving. It's a high quality, very premium environment. And I think we'll see advertisers really flocking towards brand safety and quality and premiumness, which is harder to get on the social platforms. The last thought on that is I think advertisers or advertising models are usually thought of as kind of the lower quality. Oh, it's ad based. It's not, it's not as good. I think what we're going to see, especially on Twitter, is that the advertisers might actually be a force for quality, of really saying, if you want our dollars here within this environment, you have to make sure it's a clean, well-lit, high-quality environment. You can't just have a free-for-all where fake news and, made-up stuff is rampant.
Now, when you say made-up stuff, I know this is not what you mean, but I'd just be fascinated to very quickly ask you your thoughts on algorithm-generated text. And does that fit into the realm of premium? We've on this show, we've had a company called YouMaker. It's aimed at students, and you put in a couple of string kind of search words, and it'll start writing text for you. And the text is actually very readable and pretty well researched. It's bound to creep into journalism. So does that become an issue for you?
No, for sure. It's a huge issue. It's a creepy a creepy area. I'd be uncomfortable with that. But I think all great changes start with the people in the industry being uncomfortable with something. So I reserve the right, when we do another podcast, number 700, I'd say this is actually an amazing tool for journalism and for the industry, right? As of now, just having AI generated stuff that's not marked as such is going to be, I think, pretty terrifying. I think where we'll actually see it first is in images, and maybe it is okay, sort of as a replacement for stock photography. Yeah, it's good. We're entering a terrifying period, especially I think the most is probably the deep fakes on video, where you actually don't know if the person said something or if it's made up.
Yeah, and it can often be spread virally without much fact checking.
Yes.
Let's go back to one of those points that we parked. You talked about being a serial entrepreneur. Privilege for me to be able to come to New York and to get into a slightly different ecosystem than the one I'm normally in with London. What would your advice be to serial entrepreneurs, or would-be entrepreneurs rather, at the minute, in terms of what they need to be thinking about if they want to build a successful tech business? Obviously, there's huge challenges in the market. Finances are a little bit tighter. Yes. So it'd just be interesting to know what you would suggest to those who are keen to start a company.
I think the most important muscle for entrepreneurship is the muscle of focus, of just figuring out what is that thing you do better than anyone else in the world, and then just obsessively focus on that one thing, and clean everything, take everything off the table that's not serving that obsessive focus. And I think for entrepreneurs, it's usually one of the hardest things. It's easy as lip service. Everyone say focus is important and all that. But by definition, if we're starting a company, it's because we fall in love with an idea. We're kind of wired to be falling in love with ideas, and ideas are so easy. They're easy and almost meaningless. What's really important is the 10 years that come after the idea. And therefore, it's really easy to just be throwing ideas at the wall and having new ideas and talking to customers and having more ideas from them. And to me, the most important thing is really focus. Otherwise, startups just don't have any justification to exist. You know, we're strapped for resources. We're making it with many fewer people than we would in a big company and all that. So for us, you know, at AppBrain, if I look at our very first business model from 15 business plan from 15 years ago, it's eerily similar to what we're doing today. And that's, I said, I want to put two links in front of a reader. One would be an organic link, a recommendation for what to read next. One would be a link to what advertisement to read next. And I want to make those recommendations better and better. And that's what we've been heads down doing for 15 years, is just trying to make those two links better and better.
Well, look, thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to talk to me today and spend some time here. Best of luck. I mean, obviously, you're already reaching a third of all of the world's online consumers, but fingers crossed you can put quality content in front of them going forward.
Thank you. Appreciate it.